Welcome to episode number 30 of our podcast Up on Foil, where we talk all about foiling. Today, a guest that you've probably seen before on YouTube, on Instagram, it's Ben Beholz. He's a professional kite surfer, content creator of German out of Germany, and he's taking us with him on his travels across the world. Thank you very much, Ben, for coming on the show. Is there anything you want to add right away?
Not yet. I need to get into the groove. It's actually the first podcast I do with video, so give me a few minutes.
No problem. If you see me wobbling around, Ben, it's just because I'm on a balance board, and that's usually what we do. Gael, are you on a balance board as well today?
I'm not. It's too late for me to be on a balance board. Right.
No worries. You're 1 hour ahead. Ben, we get into your YouTube at first, and as far as I've seen, you have two different YouTube channels, a YouTube and a YouTube Shorts.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Why do you have two different channels?
Yeah, it was like it's actually both are very old, but at one point when YouTube came up with this short format, and I didn't really understood the format, so I was not really sure about the format, so I decided to use that channel for uploading short videos and short content. And I was a little bit scared that it might affect because it was a new format, and I was a little bit scared that it might affect the performance of my vlogs. So yeah, I did that basically. And also, what is interesting, I had a few videos that got quite viral on the short channel, and then I uploaded a few videos, long-term videos onto this channel, and just to see how they perform and stuff. And I think it was also pretty right what I thought. So I went back with a long-form videos on my vlogging channel, and the short-term videos, the short format is on the short channel. I think it's good to separate it because it's two different kind of target groups.
That is very interesting. Maybe you can tell us how you started making videos. The why, maybe, the how?
Yeah, I started with kitesurf videos, and I started kitesurf in 2010, something like this. I just like to be creative, and just kiting is a little bit too boring for me. It was too boring. I was never that kind of person that was super focused on sports only. I mean, I really enjoy to be out and I enjoy to do sport, but I'm not that kind of guy that does competition or anything, something like this. And it was actually just to do something creative. And I also did music back in the days, before I started kiting, and I always had this this love for being creative also. And then I combined it, and but there was no plan, especially in the first years, there was no plan to turn it into a job. It was more because it was my passion.
And when you started producing content, were you expecting that someday you would live your dream life, probably traveling off of that?
No, to be honest, when I started to create content, when I really started to create content, it was 2013, something like this. And kiting back then was very small also. And I think there was just maybe 10 guys in the world that really could afford a living from kiting. That's I don't have I didn't research so it don't take me too serious with this, but it's just very, very small amount of people that could live from this sport, because it was very small. And and I think the sport grew, and also the audience of the sport grew. And and then things turned out to be like this, but it was, I never thought it, I think the first time I realized I could make a living out of it was 2017, something like this. And, but after at this time I already did videos for 4 years. And yeah,
what was the epiphany that made you realize that?
It was a contract from my first sponsoring contract from Core, and it was actually the first contract I read through. And it just made me understand that there is a real value for brands in content. And you have to imagine, like, back then, 2017, I mean, YouTube just came up a little. So I think Kevin Langere was, like, in kitesurfing. He was the only one. I mean, foil surfing, like palm foiling, wasn't existing back then. And and he was the first one who did vlogs, but everything was very small. And when you talk to a camera, like doing a video on the beach, people were just looking on you and like thinking, "What? That's a stranger," or whatever. And like if I say now, like it was new for me that there was a value in this video content creation thing. I mean, right now nobody would understand it because everybody knows like they're a social influencer and you can make money out of everything, like out of cooking or whatever. But back then it wasn't that clear. And Core had very early, I think they had a very clear vision where to go. And they also had some very smart people in the company which were looking like forward and had a good vision. And I think me as content creator, I was one of the first, one of the first content creators in kiteboarding, and I was small enough for them, I think, to afford. So, it was like, I think it all came together, and it was also, I think for them, it was also not so clear if it will turn out like this, but they already understood there is a very high chance that the content creating will be very valuable at one point.
So that was 7-8 years ago. How was that first contract? Are you allowed to talk about it? Are you willing to talk about it? How did it look? Did they say you have to produce so and so many videos a year, it needs to show this and this product, or does a contract like that look?
Yeah, of course, like I won't tell numbers or anything, but
sure, no
worries. In general, it was like a very open contract, which was it had a different kind of aspects. Like one aspect is like me back in the days as an athlete, and the other aspect was me as a content creator. And my value was definitely the content creating part. So this was what I was focusing on. And they pretty much left everything open. Like I could basically do what I want to do, and I would get the support of Core as long as it's like kiting relevant stuff back in the days. And that was very cool because, like, it's not they were never like, you have to do that many videos. You have to, of course, there were definitely ways how they were kind of compensating. Like, you wouldn't get the same support if you do one video per year or if you, like, do 25 videos per year. But it was, like, all my decision. And I could also do the content about topics or whatever I wanted to do. And, it was very open. The only thing they had like in the contract was that, for example, I need to be on Core Gear and stuff like this, so that it makes sense for them. But I think also for them it was maybe, I mean, it's like, I don't know for sure, but I can imagine that also for them everything was very early, and I think they also kind of learned with me because you like everything, like all the content kind of like it was just very, there was not much knowledge about it, and especially in the beginning things changed very fast. And when I started it was like Facebook, and then Facebook kind of died, then it was Instagram, and so things changed very fast. And I think for the brands, like all kind of brands, it was very important to learn and to be there and to have people out there that are kind of testing, trying, and getting real expertise in this kind of field.
So as we said, it's a couple of years ago. How did these contracts change? Did they change, or do you have still your way that you can choose what to do, or did they change it somehow?
And I don't know how it is with other riders. Like I know I was one of the first riders that was meant to produce content, and I don't know how it is with other riders, but I think that it really depends to the personality. Like I think I'm one of the persons that has like a lot of drive, like from like I just want to do things, and I always have ideas, and I think I produce more than they would ask for, and of course you also have other riders that maybe don't have this energy, like not this push in the back, and then of course you need to make sure like things are set up in a good way, but. I don't have insights into the contracts they have with other riders, but for me, it's definitely absolute free. So I can really do what I want. It never happened that they sent me a product and said, do a video about it or something. Even though if I make a video about a product once in a while, it's really because I feel I want to talk about it. And it was never like that they were like, look, here's a new bar or here's a new foil, do a video about it. It's just like, it goes like in the create, it's part of the creative flow. Yeah.
But do you look at what they have and say like, I would like this foil, maybe I'll make a video about it, or how does it work? How do you get gear from them?
Yeah. I mean, for me, gear is my tool. So I basically need to work, and it's nowadays it is my work. So I need to be sure I have the right gear, and this is definitely one part. So when I need something or something breaks or whatever, or I don't know, like especially like in kitesurfing and wing foiling, things don't break, but in pump foiling, it happens often to me that I break, for example, a foil while climbing up a wall or whatever, and then you just like the foil drops and hits a stone or whatever. And then, of course, I need new stuff. And the other part is always like kind of development. They are like, since foil pumping came up, I had some cool like prototypes I could write and stuff, and then of course they decide what I should test and what they want my opinion about and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And moving on to more your van life and everything.
Can I, sorry Gal, to interrupt you,
please.
I must ask this question now.
Please.
Your pump foil, it's been on my mind for so long. You're still pumping that pretty low aspect front wing.
Everybody,
why?
Yeah, everybody says it. I have different foils. I also have other foils. We have like also tested around with a lot of very
higher aspect ratio,
wide and thin and sharp. Again,
higher aspect ratio.
Yeah, I find it hard to say it because. What is high and low aspect ratio? You know, like who,
like 10?
Isn't there a definition?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I always find it hard to say it because like, you know, like 4 years ago, high aspect ratio was very different from
sure.
how it is not. So, we they tested around a lot, and the foil I'm pumping is actually not even a pump foil. It's just like the biggest wing foil. But I really like it the most. Like, of course, it's not the best foil for foiling for a long time or a big distance. But what I really like about it is how agile it is, and it's actually it's not as slow as it looks, I would say. And what I don't like so much at the moment with the very high aspect foils is that I always have the feeling that the mast is the weakest point. And until now, I never rode a foil what felt that crispy when I did turns. Like there's always, it needs to be balanced, you know. Like I remember when I was pumped, like Balz had like a few years ago, he had one of the massive high aspect foils at Lake Silvaplana, and I was pumping it, and it's amazing to foil, and it's like you can foil with such a little amount of energy. But of course, it was also a few years ago. But then once you go in a turn, it's like the foil is already in the turn, and then you really feel the mast like turning and twisting, and I have the feeling this never, like in my feeling, this is still not really under control, and then I think it needs to be like a good balance of having something that is still very agile and makes fun to ride, and something what is rideable. Yeah,
I couldn't agree more with you. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I think it's just physically super difficult, I mean there's very sick stuff out and really foils you can pump for years. Like I mean, where's the world record right now? I don't know. It's like 2 hours or.
Yeah. No, five. It's four and something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I'm 100% sure, I also have prototypes from Core. You can pump like 4, 5, 10 times longer than with the one I use, but still it's not so fun. You know, like it's the question if you foil for 1 minute and you have fun, or if you fall like for 2 hours and you see it more as a distance.
Yeah, it depends what you're using it for. 100%.
Yeah,
I agree. Exactly. Agree with you. All right, Gael, you were going into a van life and the blocking.
But I'm very curious. Give me 1 second to also ask you guys a question. I'm very curious in your opinion about this. Like, what kind of foils do you ride and why?
Go ahead, Matt.
All right, I'm currently riding the Condor M and S from Indiana, but for me the front wing is not that relevant. Both are quite easy foilable. The stab is super important. I have the XS fuse, pretty short fuse, and the stab is also pretty small and closest to the front wing as possible. So it's super agile. And the on the pitch axis is really it's fun as well, but still easy to start because the front wing is big enough for me. So that's
how big is the front wing? Like how
I have how it wide here. Is it? It's pretty it's a big one actually. It's the span is 1100. I used it today. It's probably still wet. There you go. So it's 1100. It's 1500 the volume, and it's actually it's like not super high aspect,
but 1100 is still and 1100 is still I think it's good. I know. I think I
it's
this.
Still easy.
But rideable. I think like easy, when rideable. It gets bigger than 1300, I have the feeling at the moment the but I never like. Don't take me wrong, and I really don't want to say anything bad about any brand, but I never rode a foil which was bigger than 1,300 where I had the feeling the mast is stiff enough.
How tall and heavy are you? You're pretty tall.
I'm tall. 1.90 meter. My weight is like 80 kilogram. But still, like I tested around a lot with it, and what's interesting, like it really depends, like also on the way I'm foiling, like where my weight is, like is it more over the mast or am I standing like wide with more weight on the front foot? Then there's a different kind of torsion, but there's always like the delay of the foil. Like you go in a turn and your body is already in the turn and you feel the foil is like kind of following the turn and it's not the first thing in the turn.
Yeah,
but I agree. Maybe it's like only my personal opinion. But
I agree. I used to ride a 1570 foil, still quite a good speed range, but 1.40 meter span, and I used to ride only that one, and I still use it sometimes when I want to go a little bit further. I don't have much time to go for a session, I would much rather get that one so that I can spend more time on foil and less time on dock resting in between sets. But if I have to choose one, 100% the small one, and now I'm riding a 1250, but it's quite thin. It's a surf foil, a wing foil, not even a pump foil, just like you're riding, and it's so much more fun. And I agree with.
It's 1250? It's like the
square centimeters
wide.
It's about 1 meter wide.
Yeah, but that's really, really fast. How you started? Like, do you dock started or?
Yeah, I dock started. I'm yet to practice. I mean, I'm yet to learn the rock start with that one, and that's probably gonna be a game changer because if you can start,
yeah, you need to be fast, huh? Like.
Yeah, you need to be light and fast and to choose the right rock. But yeah, like I agree with what you say in terms of a connection, because yes, you can. You can pump for 5-10 minutes with these big foils, but the connection that you feel with the water, not only with the foil, with the water, when you're riding these fast, small foils, this curvy feeling is just unmatchable. And in my opinion, it's not. It, like, as you said, it's best 1 minute on a fun foil is best than 10 on a, you know.
Yeah, yeah, not, I think it's really
I wouldn't say
like...
boring, but yeah.
What's the length of mast you use, Ben?
I actually use everything between 70 and 90, but most of the time I like 80. But it's true. It's true. Like the shorter the mast, the better it is. That's definitely true. Yeah. Yeah.
But of course, it depends on the price as well. I used Kilian's Axis mast. It's like 3,000 francs for a mast. I was like... Well, maybe it's different, but I'm so scared like touching it. I'm not going to use it even. It's crazy.
It's crazy, yeah. Indeed. Yeah, of course. Like you can do something, but still there is like always this balance between aero or hydrodynamic and stiffness and the mast has to have a good hydrodynamic, and you can't like just build a fat pole which is stiffened into all directions. So it's a very interesting question, but also insane what came up. I mean, like 5 years ago, like not even, it's like 3 years ago, we were falling for 10 minutes and it was like the record or whatever. And now, like, the foils, they're insane.
Yeah.
Let's just, before, guys, sorry, we detoured your question, but we're so much into pump foiling. I want to address a few films, a few videos you uploaded, Ben, and one, of course, is this super high dock start.
Yeah.
And there you see the gear is important. It's important that it's stiff enough, but also, I mean,
well,
didn't anything break?
It's crazy. Huh? You see, you really see the board, how it like bends.
Yeah. How was that? How was that for you? How high was it?
2 meter 20.
2 meter 20 plus you 190, huh?
Yeah. It's I also use the foil I prefer most, like the big one, and I'm not sure like how easy it would be with a short fuselage and a thin foil.
Yeah, I think that's with a drop start, especially the high one. Sorry, I interrupted you. Is harder if it's bigger. If it's bigger, it's harder because you don't really need lift because you have already so much force, so much power by landing on the board. That's probably just harder to control And yeah, just like so many forces.
How many tries did it take? 54?
Yeah, something like this. I think 54, yeah. And the problem was like, it doesn't seem to be like that much, but you have to imagine like every time you have to climb up again, and boy, it was pain in the ass. But
I thought when watching the video, well, you're just going to abort. You're just going to say, well, I tried. I gave it my best, but it's not possible. But you went through with it. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. Like I think we spent the whole day at the dock, and I did a sleep in between, and then we went again and again and again. And also in the evening, like my neck was hurting like hell, and also like my foot ankles and my lower back, because I think of the landing.
Of the impact, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that was like this point when I started to understand how to do it, but still it was not enough speed, and then like the impact was already very hard from landing because the foil was not like breaking off, but still it was crashes.
I do like a difficult shot in basketball or anything, I always feel like once I sunk it, I need to confirm it. Did you have that feeling? Or you're like, no, it went all right. I'm good. Let's wrap it up.
In this case, I cannot really say, because at the end, I understood. What absolutely also made sense, but I understood it like physically that if I want to make it, I need to be faster. So I really was only focusing on trying to throw the foil in faster and trying to land faster with more forward speed. But there was no strategy or anything. And also, like, you know how it is with pump foiling. Like, there's just like 1 millimeter or 1 centimeter the wrong, like the foot position, like from 2.20 meters, it's so hard to land where you want to land.
Yeah.
And now you have 2.20 meters. What's next? Where's the limit?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. What is the highest that has been done at the moment? I researched it, but it's not.
I think that when we spoke to Yvonne a couple of days ago, episode somewhere up here, he said that he also thinks that the limit is roughly 2.20 to something. Yeah, probably 2.5 is really just crazy.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yes, so, such a good video. But yes, let's get into the next portion of the video.
First of all, before we even ask, like, how is your van life and everything, like, you must have the biggest garage ever seen on a van to fit all this gear, don't you?
I think if somebody would break into my van, the gear that is in the back might
hopefully
be more valuable than my van.
Hopefully not. So yeah, like your van looks amazing, but yeah, then you understand that you're living in it, so it should be comfortable. And like, when did you decide to make this life? How was the initial investment of this van? How did it evolve?
Yeah, it was actually like, what's your age now?
21.
21, yeah, yeah. It was like, I think 23, 22, something, 10, 23. I got like my first contract from Core, I think 2015 or 16. And this was then 2018 or something like this. And it was like, I had the feeling already, like I really worked on my contract. So it was like first Core, then I got Prelimit as a sponsor, and then later Nuffins and stuff. So I had a good base of sponsors. And we also had a good, I would say a good cooperation, like a very productive and cooperation. And I also really trusted into them, and I think they trusted into me. So I had the feeling like I studied architecture, and I was working as architect for 2 years, but then I had the feeling like it's okay to make it, to turn it into a job. And the van is actually, it was because when I, after my university, I had to work, of course, like everybody, but I didn't like to invest my money in an apartment. So I, what I basically wanted to do then, like this was my plan, to buy a van, which is my car at the same time, live in the car, and then have like the money for traveling and doing projects and trying to like do what I really want. So yeah, I really bought the van when I was working as architect, and I parked my van in front of the office and was working. And in the beginning I worked full time, and then it was only on the weekends like on tour. And then like after I think 8 months or something like this, I started to work half time only, and then I had like I think 3 days working and 4 days being on the road with the van. And yeah, this concept just made it possible, like because you have all together, and it was actually never meant to be like this romantic van life thing. It was more like just super handy, and it made everything easier.
Do you mind doing a quick van tour, or it's private?
Of course, yeah, like outside it's dark, of course. Yeah. But I can show you. Like it's the front seats are turned at the moment, but of course mm-hmm. I will turn them around as well. And
so you can stay. You can stand.
Yeah.
190.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's with 190. It's a special van. It's called low frame van. Usually a van would be like 194 yeah. or 196, and it has a lower frame. It's a Ford Transit, and then you have a very high, it's like
all right,
2 meter 20 heights in on the inside. No, 2 meter 15, something like this. And then you have here is my kitchen, which is
way
small,
better
but
than
super
my
nice.
Apartment.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, but my van is not in Greece. So you have a good location. Here's my fridge. And then of course I have also like my bedroom. Yeah, the one thing you learn is like to have everything very cleaned, and this is my shower
organized.
Here on the inside. Yeah, that's very organized. Really cool. And here, that's wow. quite cool. You can basically close the door, and then you have two rooms. Like here's my bedroom and shower and toilet, and then here is my toilet. Yeah, it's small, but it's everything there.
And so it's cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you for asking. It's very clean, and that's the one thing I think I really learned is like when you live in a small space there. Everything has its place, and everything, yeah.
So yeah. You're in
my
Italy at the moment.
Say, yeah,
sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
My friends always say it looks very sterile and like a dentist's office.
It's probably not everyone complete. That looks like that. So you're in Italy at the moment. Are you alone at the moment? As I've seen from your videos, sometimes or often you're with a camera person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm with my doggy. My dog, she's always traveling with me. And I'm at the moment I'm alone, but like every month for about 10 days, I'm on the road with my cameraman.
Cool. That's really cool. So
and it's always the same guy filming for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're working together since 3 years, and he's also a very talented wing foiler, kite surfer, and also pump foiler. And yeah, and it really makes sense. He really understands the sport, and yeah.
So when you're traveling together, are you in your van or does he bring his own?
No, he lives with me. Yeah, yeah, he's a good friend of mine now, and yeah, we live together and we work together, and yeah, it's big enough. If you like, if you're friends, of course, it wouldn't be big enough if it's like something more official.
And when you have a year ahead of you, you a couple of weeks ago or months even, time flies, you posted a video that you gave it your everything you have for last season. Now we are in 2025. What's next? What have you planned for this year? How far ahead do you usually plan for a season or even two?
Yeah, like the last year, I planned a lot. And I had also some cooperations with, for example, the hotel. And it was like cooperations which for example, the Interboat invited me and stuff. So this kind of cooperations kind of define what I'm doing. And it was very nice last year, but this year I decided to be more free again. And it's like the last 2 years, especially the last year, felt more like a job. I was hustling a lot and like always on the road, and it was just a little bit too much. And then I kind of had the feeling I lost a little bit the fun of just go foiling and kiting. And this year I planned actually to have more time for myself again on the water. So I didn't took any till now. You never know if something comes which is super exciting. Of course, I would never say no, but for the moment, I didn't have any planned any cooperations like this. So I hope there will be more time again to try new stuff on the foil and go kiting. And this is basically like how I plan it in general. Like I have some big projects, and then I try to plan like the rest of the year around this big project. And usually the big projects are defined of my partners for the project. And this year I basically made the plan to have more time on the water again, and to have maybe more time for some drop start videos and stuff like this. And this is the plan for this year. And the cool thing I think is that it's I have this rough plan how I do things, and then of course like before the shootings we get more detailed, and then we have like stuff we need to get done. It really gives me like at the end of the year the possibility to like relax and to really reflect on the year how it was, and then I can decide like how I feel and how I want to continue this year. Which I find cool. Like I guess in not every job you can decide how you want to
for sure.
Yeah, what you want to do or how you want to
So what's next in your schedule if you have any?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like I'm now here at Lake Como, which is basically something like my home. And I'm here till tomorrow. And then I'm going for like Germany for a few days, and then I'm heading to Greece. There's a shooting for Nuffins. I don't think you will see something of it on my social media channels, but maybe something small. I don't know yet, but there's nothing planned. And then I'll be on the road with my colleague I'm doing You Should Surf With together, and we will be traveling until from the 21st until the 7th of April, and then I'll be shooting with Jan for 8 days, and then I'm planning to go to Egypt. So far, like for 10 days, so far is the plan right now. And after that, in May, it's actually also planned yet. I'll be like the whole May, I'll be in Sardinia, what is very important. It's the best time of the year always, like summer season in Sardinia. But also sure. Greece, man. It's like, I would like to ask more about you, like where you live and...
I think like it's going to... Yeah, it's not going to be that simple to bring the van here, because I think, you have to go probably from Athens. You can grab a ferry and come to Cyprus, but it's going to take ages. it's probably closer from like Turkey or something like that. So, because it's Cyprus is right below Turkey. But yeah, it's a lovely place. But again, it's a bit far. And like to be fair, and it's not because I'm Italian and everything, but Sardinia has lovely places. So you can go there and see, like, it's pretty much the same thing, right?
But yeah. What made you going to Cyprus? What was the reason that you moved there?
Yeah, so I just got a job here and now I incorporated my company here in Cyprus.
Ah, and what are you working as?
I have a marketing agency and I work with online coaches.
Ah, wow. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah, good. Then you're really, really into content production, I guess, or...
Yeah, exactly. I tried to do your life. I had this idea in mind of doing the van life, and then last year I spent like a month traveling with a friend through Greece, and it was so painful that I completely deleted this idea off my mind. And I wanted to ask you, do you sometimes have I just want a normal house? Do you have this feeling?
Yeah, I have it like very often. And like what you said is absolutely true. Like what I think is about van life, it has very positive aspects, but as everything that has positive aspects, also van life has negative aspects. And what you say, like the hustle of traveling and working at the same time, it can be very exhausting. Like moving to another place, going to bed at a new place, you don't know, getting up in the morning, I don't know, like 6 a.m. starting to work, and then like get to know the place where you am, just to leave the place in the evening again and go to another place. So it's like not easy. So I bought a piece of land at Lake Como like a few years ago, and I have something like a home there, and I use this place to relax and to gain energy again. So this is where I am right now also. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't have a house.
Not a lot of wind at Lake Como right now, huh?
Yeah, right now it's winter again. It was warm and now it's winter again. The thing is, like with the van life, it's not that I like it most. I mean, it's beautiful. I really like it, but I could also imagine living in a house. But the problem with the sport we are doing, like with foiling and kiting and stuff, is that it's an outdoor sport and it's really connected, especially kiting, to wind and to the conditions. So I think it will always be like the alternative would be flying, and then I would always choose the van. Like I have to fly once in a while, but then I would always choose the van instead of like flying from hotel to hotel.
I have a few questions about some videos of yours, but before we get into these videos, I want to hear from you. Which ones are your favorites?
Videos?
Yeah.
Oof. I don't think I have it. I don't have a favorite video.
All right, then let me tell you one of my favorites. There are a bunch. But one of my favorites was when you made this kite surfboard out of plywood. So much fun to watch. So much fun to watch. How did he came up with that idea? I know that Nico Prin, the windsurfer, he did a board out of plywood as well. I'm not sure who was first, but I really enjoy videos like that as well.
Interesting. Yeah, it was actually my cameraman. He has had this idea, and he said, like, did you ever try to surf on a plank, or did you ever thought about what's really needed? And it came more out of the idea because boards are getting super expensive, the calf board is, I think, one of the most expensive boards. I think it's almost 2,000 euros depending on the edition, like depending on the version you have. And then it was his idea, and like kind of like the asking the question, what is really needed? And we actually thought we can really ride with it. Like I remember when I built it and I saw it for the first time with the fins and stuff, I thought definitely I can do a back mob with it. And it was actually pretty surprising that it doesn't work.
Yeah, I was surprised too. I thought, yeah, you're going to shred, no problem.
But
are you also kiting, Matt?
I used to kite. I used to windsurf a lot. And then I always thought, like, and I'm never going to kite. And I tried it and it was surprisingly fun. And I enjoyed it a bit. Then the problem is you always need a lot of wind. And now I have a family and I cannot go to places with too much wind. So I thought, all right, I'm just going to go on foil. And I started kite foiling a bit. It was hard.
And you're also running and stuff. Like you're also running, right? And bicycling.
I did some triathlons like 2-3 years ago. I feel like it's probably the ADHD that I probably have, because it's always like I'm 100% focused on something, and then 2-3 years later, I'm doing everything else else. Yeah. So I sold my triathlon bike last summer and completely went into foiling. That's just what I do now. But then from kite foiling, I thought, well, it's cool and all, but the long lines, the places you cannot get out in. And then I saw a video of Baltz and Michi Neff, Roham, where wing foiling actually didn't look stupid. It looked amazing. I thought, all right, I'm going to try that. And it was so easy to start. And the gear is so much more easy. You can handle it a lot easier. So I switched to wing foiling and sold everything else. So, yeah. So I'm not kiting anymore, really.
And what about you, Daniel? Are you also kiting or...?
No, I tried it like for kite sessions, and I wasn't able to really get up in control of the kite. I'm not really into, like, I'm not really good with wind, but I'm gonna get into wing foiling soon. And for now, I've only really been into palm foiling. I went from
How did you came, like, why did you start a palm foiling?
Yeah, because I was living in Italy. Actually not that far from where you are right now. So only lakes and smaller lakes, so without wind. And I tried kite surfing during a trip, and I wanted to do something with water. And then I saw a video from Wake Thief, and he was surfing in flat water. So I wanted to get into it, and that's how it started. And then it evolved. And now I'm in a place where, in summer at least, I can wing foil, so I'm going to take this opportunity to get into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's so cool about foiling. Like, it's really, I don't know, like kite foiling, wing foiling, para. I have the para wing
from
Enzis and testing it. It's like, it's crazy. I mean, you can do it with everything. You just need, like, yeah, even behind the boat and the wave or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just like
did you manage to go with the parawing with the palm foil? I saw a video that you posted where it seemed okay, but I think it's for me it's pretty difficult to change from being all upright to leaning against the very short parawing. I think it's more difficult than I thought again.
Yeah, like in the video, there was like in a village, and what you don't see in the video, like behind my cameraman, like upwind is a lot of houses, and the wind was super shit. But we wanted to do the video. It was actually like it was a cooperation with Nuffins, and we needed to do it. We need a dog, we need a good backdrop, so we actually had the worst spot to do it. But it's not like in the video, like you can really, in my opinion, you can really foil with a power wing, but I think like pump foil with it. And it's very intuitive. Like that was at least my feeling. Also the control, like compared to a kite, it's like you just throw it up and it flies. But I will do a video about the parawing, by the way. Like I'm having it now, I'm testing it. I had already a few sessions and we documented it, and there will be also a video about like the parawing. What I have the feeling at the moment is that it's more nervous due to gusts and everything. Like with the wing foil, you really have it in your hands, the wing and wing foiling, and you, like if you have a gust, you still can kind of keep it where you want. And with the para wing, you have the indirectness from a kite, but the para wing is not 20 meters high. It's like on your heights, where are definitely more turbulences and stuff. Yeah,
but it's also V1, right? So the next generation is going to be easier. It's going to be more stable. It's going to be bold.
Interesting. What do you have?
I have the Roger as well. I actually have the original one, the one from Michinev, from Roham. It says Roham on it. So I can just test that a little bit more. I'm trying to get into downwinding as well. And with the paddle, it's so hard. It's so exhausting. And with the paddling, it's just like flip and you're up on foil, which is super cool.
How many liters do you have on your downwind board?
It's like 110. It's pretty big.
And then it's easy to start with the power wing.
Super, super easy. I mean, even if there are waves, you can basically stand on it. The power wing in one hand, it's really easy.
Yeah, the thing is, like I tried the power wing with my 50 liter board, which is like, much under my weight. And then I really had problems getting on foil, because like it's what I found, like it was not the 3 square meters, like the pull is good, but I found it, like, of course I don't have the experience yet, like I'm sure like bites can do anything, but you could also but pumping with a power wing is just not as easy as it is with a wing. And I really don't understand how. I mean, I don't know how big the board is Biles is riding, but I think
it's bigger. Still, it's bigger.
It's bigger. Yeah.
It's bigger than yours. 50. I think it's like 70 or 80. He uses the board. He actually uses to winter foil. Like this freestyle board. So it's really bigger. But yes, of course, if we compare ourselves to Biles, well, you're a pro rider, so you can't compare yourself to Biles.
no, but it's like, he's like another word, but I think I saw videos from him, like a reel where he was like doing backflips and stuff, and I think it was like maximum 70 liter, but of course his weight is 70 kilograms, so yeah. So
would
68, 70, 72, something like this. I think he's not too, I don't know. Yeah, like in my first session, like the 55 liter, there was a little bit, I need to ride bigger boards with the power wing. So it's like, maybe I also should ride bigger boards with the wing.
I just remembered, I still have a kite, and I use it sometimes, not last season, for a snow kiting. And I remember another video of you where you kited on water and then went over the snow. Also one of my favorite videos. How is that for you? Where did you come up with the idea, and do you enjoy doing that?
This is actually, like, if you ask me if I have a favorite video, it would be one of the, it was very cool. Yeah, it was like at Lake Silvaplana, and it was just like a coincidence. I was there and it was snowing, and the conditions were like something like you don't have often, like super rare that the lake is not frozen and like it's still liquid water, but you already have snow and wind. And and then we did it. It was the first time I did it, Lake Silvaplana. And then I did it again, like I think 2 years ago at Lago Bianco, but this was planned, that we knew it's going to be like this. But the original version, which is the one which got so viral, I think it's the, I just did it with the GoPro. I don't know which one did you saw, the one with the GoPro or the one where we drove up with the red train to the Lago Bianco?
Well, I think I saw both, but I just, from now I remember like you going on the water and then like over a little hill. So it probably is Lago Bianco.
Yeah, it was. This was Lago Bianco. Yeah, this one, I was confused. This one was planned. And the first time we did it, we did it with I did it only with a GoPro, and that was just like I saw the conditions and I went out, and that was like crazy. It was very
that
cool.
Is so cool.
Yeah, but it's also something everybody asks. I mean, like can you, how good can you like kite with a kiteboard on snow? And like I asked myself that question for many times actually.
Can you go in powder with a kiteboard? Like really powder?
It worked really good. Like the first time it was powder, it was like fresh snow, and it worked very good.
So cool.
It has
so
the cool. But I think the other way around, like with the snowboard and the water, is not so easy because the snowboard has a like the shape with a kiteboard is like the exact opposite than with a snowboard.
Yes. Yeah.
And
But we had a podcast with Aaron Kitesurf. I don't know if you know his videos, the one he trains putting on his wetsuit and whatnot. And he went kite surfing with a snowboard. He took it to, I think, Egypt it was, and he actually managed to get going a little bit.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I actually saw a video the
other
day.
I didn't know this.
And this person was surfing on a wave with a snowboard. Of course, like he needed
yes,
to
yeah.
drop.
What the fuck?
He dropped like he was on a longboard with someone else, and then while the longboard was already on the wave,
he jumped
on the wave. Insane. But so, I wanted to ask you one thing, Ben, because my favorite video of yours is the one where you pump oil in that super luxury hotel in the.
You say illegal. It says illegal on top, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So how was that? And like, if you can say that, did they ask you to do those videos, or you tell them, look, can we do that?
It's actually that was cool. That was really cool. You have to imagine this hotel. Yeah. I think one night in this hotel is about 1,000 euros or something, and like it's like a hotel I would never be at. And it was like full. It was like full with guests. And the CEO of the hotel watched my video. And I met him at Lake Silvaplana. It's like a hotel group. They have several hotels, Giardino Hotel Group. And we already did a project with them at Lake Silvaplana at their hotel there, which was 2 years ago. And it was a combination of wing foiling, kite surfing, and pump foiling in the pool. And then they liked it and they said, okay, now come to our main hotel, which was this hotel. And it was full of people, full of guests. And we were like rock stars. We could literally do whatever we want. And it was so weird. Cool. Like in the beginning, we were like with our foil, like on the pool, watching the others and hoping to not distract anybody who is like paying thousands of euros for one night. But the CEO, I guess he knew it already, and the people really started to like what we did, and they started to watch us and started to talk to us, and then we started to relax and we started to really to foil there. And there's, for example, a pond with koi carps and stuff, and we were just like foiling in between the koi carps, and we could really do what we want, and they did it. And there's like this hotel, like the like it's you feel like it's when you go into this hotel, you feel everybody's very polite, but they're polite in a not in an awkward way, in a very professional way. And and this, they gave us the feeling that we could ask whatever we need. So we basically started to be like this, and we were like, okay, we need a golf cart with a driver, or now we need to for example, imagine like the indoor pool is like it's like an indoor pool which has all the rails, and in the video you don't see any rails. So we said, okay, we want to foil in the indoor pool, but they need to take away the rails. And then he was like, okay, tomorrow at 7 a.m all rails will be gone. And we came there at 7 a.m and it was like only the pool and the painters on the roof. And it's like original. It's a few hundred years old. And it's made from some very, very famous artists, like Italian artists from Milano and stuff. So it's like super valuable shit in this pool. And they just took away all the rails and stuff, all the, I don't know, and we went foiling. It's like, it was very cool. It was a very, very cool project. And of course, yeah, they asked if we can do it, and they invited us, and it was fun. It was really cool. And they had like this motor yard, what we can use, and like they had just endless possibilities.
So cool. So amazing.
And yeah, I think this was one of the coolest shootings I ever had. And it was also like Jan and Felix, the two other guys which were there with me, like they really enjoyed hotel life. We could eat and whatever we want, so they really went out for dinner every evening and were sending it. So it was a very good shooting. I really liked
a nice
it.
Contrast as well to your van life.
Yeah, it was like when they booked us for this project, they asked us what we need and stuff, and I was like checking their homepage, like, what the fuck, it's so expensive, everything. And I was like, okay, we need one room, it's enough, and maybe enough food and stuff. And and of course they also paid us a little bit for it and stuff, so, but I didn't want it to take too much, you know. And then one day before the shooting started, the CEO called me and was like, why do you only have one room? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, it just felt right and stuff. And then he said, come on, you also want to enjoy the hotel after living in a van. And then everybody got its own room. And it was like,
wow,
it was really
cool. Humble
Ben.
Humble Ben.
I mean, imagine like, I never thought, I mean, maybe for those who are in hotels like this, but they change the room 3 times per day. That means like in the morning I got up and my room was like had this kind of morning design, and then I went to breakfast and we started shooting, and then I came like around 1 o'clock I came back home to relax and make a power nap, and then the whole room changed, like the blanket changed, the pillows changed, the couch had something on which changed, so the whole room looked different. And then you came back in the evening again, and once again it looked different, and you never saw somebody. It just happened. So I think they must time it. They know when you leave the room, and then they send somebody in so you don't get interrupted and stuff. And everything was like so perfect that you don't even realize. I mean, like the first days I just came back into the room was like, something is wrong, but something is different, but I didn't got it. And then you don't think about it. And after 3 days,
am
you
I
start
in the right
to
room?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
listen,
it was very cool.
Just one more video for my part I want to address. And that's your morning workout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also one of my absolute favorites. How long, it's like a 5-minute-ish video. How long does it take to film something like that? Is that half a day? Is it a day? Or is it even like, well, an hour?
It was 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, what you don't see is like there's a big distance between all the spots and yeah, it's 2 weeks. This was 2 weeks.
It's such a cool video. So nice. So it just gives you joy.
Thank
great
you
for
yeah.
morning. Thank you.
Yeah, it was fun. It was very, very fun to make it. It was awesome, the beginning of pump foiling, but yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Like at the end, it's just 5 minutes, but it takes like so much time to shoot it.
So I don't want to address any more videos. We're way over an hour. Just I just want to ask you. I saw on your website that you you offer coachings as well. People can come to you and learn what everything you do.
Yeah, like of course, like theoretically also foiling. But at the moment it's more like kite surfing. And I also have the private coachings online, which is not really possible for me most of the time to do because I'm traveling and I have my own timeline. So what I'm focusing on is like the coachings I offer. Like I think this year it's like 3 coachings, and then it's like 3 camps where you can what you can join, and this is at the moment it's only kite surfing. And what I always do is like in these coachings I ask if they want to learn foiling, and some wants to learn, so we go out for a foil session as well. But I think foiling is at the moment is something people, it's only freaks that do it, and they do it themselves.
So do you have some spaces left?
Like to learn yes. For the Greek camp, the second Greek camp. No, the first Greek camp, the first sail safari in Greek is some space left, and also for Sardinia the coaching is some space left. Yeah.
All right, we're gonna just add your website here or down in the comments
Thank
so
you.
People can check it out and see where you can find it.
Yeah. Actually, it was really like I would also have a lot of questions to you guys. So it was really very structured.
Maybe we can do that once the podcast is over, because honestly, I'm pretty much through with my list. Gal, do you have anything else you want to ask Ben?
No, that's fine. I think it was a great episode and a pleasure hearing your stories and meeting you. And so, yeah, maybe we're going to chat a bit off the episode because the episode was about you.
Thank you.
Ben, do you have anything you want to share with the listeners, the viewers?
Go foiling. Enjoy foiling.
awesome great. So all that's left for me is to tell you who's the next episode gonna be with, and it's gonna be with D. Dave West. I'm really looking forward. Huge deal. Have you met him, Ben?
Dave West,
yes, the Australian guy,
the Aussie foiler.
Everything as well.
Oh wow. No, I will Google it right now.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ben, for coming on the show. Thank you, Gael, as well. If you like the show, we have a Patreon down in the comments. If you want to see older episodes, you can find all of these in the playlist on YouTube or on Spotify, Apple Podcast. And let's just stop here, but we keep recording and we can just keep on chatting. And if you want to listen to that, we're going to put that on our Patreon, and you can find it there if you want so. All right. See you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that was smart, eh?
And we can just keep on going now.
What questions have you got, Ben?
Kid,
yeah.
Yeah.